let's start with, you guys are both good people and it didn't work out for XYZ reasons. As hard as it is, I really just tried to focus on that. And I would write a lot. I would write every day of just all the things that I needed to work on. And I focused on myself, and I'm still making mistakes, right? Like, I'm 100% not healed.
Welcome to the Brown Girl Podcast. This show was created to elevate the voices and perspectives of dual identity South Asians around the world. Here we have conversations on topics and issues that impact our community, as well as share the stories of personal successes and the struggles that often go unsaid. My name is Julie George, and I'm your host.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Brown Girl Podcast. Today we have a returning guest, Sheetal Patel. Sheetal was actually on the pod originally just over a year ago. I loved speaking with her then, and I'm so thrilled to have her back on today. We all saw her on Indian Matchmaking Season 2 and Season 3, and we saw her story of finding love and saw her relationship unfold on TV. And since Season 3 aired in the spring of 2023, she has had a lot of life changes and updates, and she's talking about it all for the very first time publicly on this podcast. And sharing her recent experiences with so much vulnerability and transparency. I know that is not easy to do. It takes a lot of courage to come out and talk about your rawest emotions and feelings and what you're going through. But I really believe there's a lot of power that comes from sharing in that type of way. And so I want to thank Sheetal for coming on the podcast today and sharing so candidly. I know I can relate to a lot of what Sheetal shared today when I've been in similar seasons of life in the past. And so I would implore you to listen with an open heart. Thank you, Sheetal, for trusting this podcast for this interview. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Here, Sheetal.
Hey, Sheetal, how are you?
You know, a lot's changed, Julie, since we chatted last time. A lot of life changes.
Yeah. So thank you for coming on the podcast again. You know, we had originally podcasted for the first time together in August of 2022. And so that's just over a year ago. People loved that episode. We all saw you for the first time on Indian Matchmaking on Season 2. And people loved your story of finding love. And then we got to, you know, see you come back earlier this spring for Season 3 and see more of your story unfold. So with that being said, I know you just mentioned you've had a lot of life changes since we last saw you on TV.
Yes, I have.
Everyone wants to know, are you guys still together? There's been a lot of speculation that you've been on the receiving end. So, you know, tell us, what has life been like for you the last few months and what you would like to share with the world as far as, you know, the status of your relationship that we saw on TV.
Definitely. So I'm, you know, still in the healing process, but much better than I was a few months ago, actually, when I talked to you. But we are no longer together. We did decide to part ways for a multitude of reasons that we can get into on the podcast. But I'm still feeling the loss. I'm still grieving. It was probably one of the most significant relationships of my life.
I'm so sorry that the relationship didn't pan out. You know, I know we were all rooting for you, but at the same time, I truly believe, and I know you do too, that like things happen the way they should. And when things don't work out like you plan, sometimes that's God protecting you. And so if you're comfortable, can you kind of share with the audiences like high level overview from your perspective why the relationship did not work out?
Of course. So I can kind of start from the beginning. And, you know, just to be fair to Neeraj, I can only speak from my perspective. And I want to share what I went through and what I learned from the relationship. And what I saw was the breakdown. And I think, you know, when I got on Indian Matchmaking, I remember, and I wasn't dating Neeraj when I started filming the show. I remember, you know, it was so important to me to find love, but I knew that it was really important to have self-love, right? You know, we all always talk about it, like, you have to love yourself, you have to focus on yourself before you can meet someone. And I didn't really understand I knew the importance of that, but I don't know if I really understood what that meant. And so prior to coming onto the show, I had done a lot of self-work. I did a lot of self-reflection. But when you're working on yourself alone in the absence of triggers, it's easy, you know, it's much, much easier. But when you're in a relationship, you know, that serves as a mirror and you're being triggered and your wounds are coming out, that's much different. And I didn't realize until I got into the relationship how unfulfilled and unhappy I was with myself. And, you know, I think that in itself was working against our relationship. And, you know, of course, it takes two people and there were compatibility issues. But I will say from my side, I came into that relationship with a lot of insecurities. I needed validation. And I really genuinely thought that I was ready for love, you know, and I thought I did all this work and I'm here and I'm ready. And when I got into that relationship, I saw a lot of dark parts of myself that had come out. And that happens in relationships. You know, the relationship is the mirror. And I'm not saying that he caused those things to come out. They were things that were in me. And I just really couldn't manage, you know, I couldn't manage my triggers. Mm-hmm. I couldn't regulate my nervous system. I just had so many deep, deep wounds that I wasn't really even aware of, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And then to put yourself, you know, your relationship so publicly in this, on this platform, you know, Netflix and Indian matchmaking, they're portraying these stories as, oh my God, you know, these people are, they've got their happily ever after. And I think what they're missing is it does a disservice to people that are looking for relationships, because we all know, you know, it's not happily ever after. And I wish that these shows would delve in a little more to show the work that needs to be done on each person, you know, the work that you didn't need to do on yourself. And none of that was discussed or talked about on the show. And I get it, you know, they're packing into 8 episodes, but I think that would be so much more valuable. And bring on a therapist, bring on a dating coach, you know, all these things are really important. And these things kept coming out in my relationship and I crumbled, you know, I really did crumble in a lot of ways.
Hey y'all, quick break here to tell you about one of our episode sponsors, Lingo Dodo. If you come from a South Asian cultural background and you have young children or nieces or nephews and you want to help them preserve their native language, allow me to share Lingo Dodo with you. Their signature product is the Lingo Pad, which is designed to teach kids the basics of their native language and is currently offered in Gujarati, Hindi, Punjabi, Tamil, Telugu, and my mother tongue, Malayalam. I love the mission of this company. All of their products are safe, screen-free, and educational alternatives to the internet, ensuring that children are using technology for good. With the holiday season around the corner, check out their suite of products at www.lingododo.com. That's LINGODODO.com. And give the gift of culture and language to the children in your life. And now back to our episode.
So it sounds like you had some elements of like unhappiness and unfulfillment from within you that perhaps is a result of childhood or just, you know, previous upbringings that you were around, and that manifested into the relationship in an unhealthy way and kind of escalated from there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's, you know, it's not fair to come into a relationship, you know, and I do think, look, it's my responsibility to heal myself. And I do think your partner should support that. But at the same time, it's not fair to put those types of expectations, you know, on someone else. Like I really did put a lot of the responsibility of my happiness onto my partner.
Right. So you mentioned like therapy. Did you guys try going to couples counseling or therapy together or anything like that?
We did, you know, honestly. And I think, you know, a lot of people on the internet, there's always speculation like, oh, he didn't want to commit to you, or you guys were taking so long for the ring, and all those things. And that's just not true. There was none of that. You know, nothing actually happened in that sense. It was more that we couldn't get along. But the other aspect of it was, I don't think there's any two people that wanted this to work as much as we did. Like, we really tried. We did the therapy. We had a village of, you know, friends and family that were really helping us. And our inner circle was rooting for us, you know. And of course, there's fans too that were rooting for us. But people don't really know, you know, like they come out and they say, like, oh, you guys seemed so different on social media. Like, he's a dancer and he's doing all these other things and you're into fashion or whatever. Like, you know, they're putting us into these boxes. But they have no idea. It's not what people think, you know, and it wasn't a lack of commitment. It wasn't infidelity. It wasn't any of those things.
Right. How many months into the relationship did you start to notice signs that like the relationship was kind of going south? Mm-hmm. Was it pretty early on? You know, and the reason I'm asking is I know I've been in relationships where like, okay, mm-hmm. I just knew deep down this is like, this doesn't feel like it's truly in alignment. And I would notice those signs early on, but because I was so caught up in like, oh my God, I have to make this work because of whatever external pressure or reasoning, I would either try to ignore those signs or try to rationalize certain things, certain behaviors, and like talk myself into believing like, okay, maybe this is normal, even though it's not. And I think that's something that like a lot of people can relate to. So I'm curious, like, at what point in the relationship did you start to see those potential signals? And how did you kind of process it at the time? And did any of these scenarios that I just shared kind of like happen to you as well?
Yeah. So I would say, you know, pretty early on, I'm not the type of person that thinks that one fits.
Mm-hmm. One size fits all.
Each couple is different, right? So, you know, a lot of people say like your first year, that's the honeymoon phase and everything should be easy. We had challenges. You know, we went through something very challenging, I think about 2 months into the relationship. And that was hard for us to handle together. And I think it, and this is not to blame anyone, it's just our personalities and how we handle things. And so those sorts of things, just those challenges, you know, kept happening where we really couldn't work as a team or get through things together, you know. And so that was pretty early on. It was like two months in, and then it kept escalating where we weren't able to work together, you know, and mm-hmm. and come up with a solution or resolve conflicts. And, you know, I can take a lot of the onus. I mean, I can communicate well with my friends and my family, but I have some serious blocks when it comes to relationships, and I'm not a very good communicator. You know, I shut down. I can become very passive aggressive, and maybe there's a bit of entitlement in me where I'm like, okay, this person, he should just know. He should just read my mind. And that's absolutely ridiculous mm-hmm. because how could anyone else, how could they read your mind? How could they know what's going on? And I think that in a combination with my partner not knowing how to sort of navigate that, just kept snowballing, you know, and snowballing. Right. And so it was the challenges and I guess the lack of us being able to work together as a team and, you know, me communicating effectively, all of those things were present pretty early on. But I think that we thought, you know, through therapy and through time, because there's no doubt. I mean, we have so much love for each other. It's not, you know.
Right.
And so I think we thought, okay, eventually things will smooth out and we'll be able to sort of like work through those things. But there were just fundamental issues. And like I said, I won't speak for Neeraj, I'll speak for myself, is that there were fundamental things inside of me that I have to work on my own. And maybe with someone else, it might be that they might be able to handle that and navigate it. I'm not sure. But I think within that relationship, I just wasn't able to work through those things and heal through whatever I have inside of me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it manifests in so many different ways, right? It's like I have insecurities. I have periods of low self-worth and low confidence. You know, I don't necessarily always feel like I'm deserving of love. I label myself as I'm good some days or I'm bad some days. And you know, that's all things from childhood where it was like when you're told that you're bad, you're unlovable. And my parents did the best they could. They're Indian parents.
Yeah.
But I was always the rebellious one. And I always tried to push outside the box. And I guess I still carry that with me of feeling like I'm bad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and when I'm bad or I make a mistake, I'm not worthy of being loved. And whenever I feel that way, I expect like so much reassurance from my partner. And that's a lot, you know, it's a lot for someone else.
Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned that you guys started experiencing some challenges pretty early on. So
mm-hmm.
if we talk about the timeline, so you were previously living in New York and then now mm-hmm. you live in Miami and you had specifically moved down there for the relationship. And I think that was pretty early on, right? Like 2 or 3 months into the relationship.
That was 5 months.
5 months into the relationship. Okay, so you guys mm-hmm. went from like basically having a long distance relationship, New York to Miami, to then living mm-hmm. under the same roof, which is like quite a shift so early on. Do you feel like moving to Miami and living under the same roof, did it kind of expedite the process of like these kinds of issues coming to light? Like, do you feel like moving together and living under the same roof, was that kind of a catalyst for like realizing these relationship issues?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think it was really good. I don't regret my move at all because I think we both had really good intentions. I mean, we wanted it to work. We wanted to have a family together. Sorry, I'm getting emotional.
No, that's okay. Yeah. Take your time.
But I think it's important to live with someone. You know, I know on the internet, like, it's funny. Now I can laugh about it. I don't care anymore. But initially it was very hard for me because the comments are just like, I don't know who goes on Reddit, but people are just disgusting on that website. They just say the most horrible things. And, you know, even when we broke up, they're like, oh, well, she's an idiot because she moved in without a ring and she deserves that. And I don't agree with that. I think living together, it was really important for us because that's when we saw, you know, a lot of these incompatibilities and these issues that started to come up because we wouldn't have known, right? If you're long distance with someone and you're spending just a weekend with them, you know, it's just a highlight or a piece of your life, but this is day to day. And we never had any issues day to day in terms of like, oh, he's messy and I like to go to sleep early. And you know, I mean, like mm-hmm. we had like little things here and there about that, but those weren't really what the issues that broke us. It really was the incompatibility and the root of that mm-hmm. is the parts that are not healed. Because if I had looked into that, or if I always think like if I had done a little more work, I don't know if I would have had the same visceral reactions to whatever was triggering me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I know you mentioned to me offline this concept of like codependency and hyperdependency, which is basically when you're relying on another person to keep your mental and physical and emotional state afloat or like yeah. in a good place. So can you kind of like talk through that a little bit and maybe share some examples, like examples of how that showed up in your relationship that perhaps at the time you didn't realize were signs of mm-hmm. codependency or codependency, and like how you process that and what you kind of learned from that?
Yeah, definitely. So I think Miami is an amazing city, and now I can't imagine living anywhere else. But the first 10 months, they were really, really, really hard for me because not only did I leave, and people have different opinions on this as well, but not only a city basically where I grew up, but I'm an actress, I'm an artist, and I came off of this television show, and I felt that in New York, because it is my comfort zone, I may have had more opportunities, right? Like, and of course you can make opportunities anywhere you go, and I'll get into that a little bit more, but I felt really lost when I moved to Miami because I'm like, okay, I'm building this home, which I want to do with this person that I love, but I didn't feel fulfilled artistically. And when you're not fulfilled in what you want to do, you know, and I have an amazing job and I'm grateful for it. I'm thankful for it. And I have that aspect, but I am a creative, you know, and when I'm not making something and when I'm not creating, I don't feel like myself. And so I felt very stuck, and I'm not blaming anyone else, but when I moved, I felt very stuck and very stagnant, and I didn't feel motivated. And I sort of took all of that negative energy and just thrust it into the relationship and onto my partner. And I would turn to him. So whenever something went wrong, I mean, it could have been anything. It could have been, I didn't like the couch that we had, you know, and I didn't feel like the house was decorated in the way that I wanted it or that would make me feel comfortable, right? Something that maybe had I been fulfilled on the creative side, or had I been happy, you know, at my baseline, maybe that wouldn't have been that big of a deal, right? But everything started to turn into a big deal. And I was just hyper-focused and hyper-dependent on my partner's actions and what my partner was doing. And that, over time, started to feel very, very suffocating for him, you know? Because he's like, he did try his best to make me feel at home and introduce me to a lot of people in Miami. But for those 10 months, I wasn't really cultivating those relationships. I didn't have my circle. And I became just very hyper-focused on the relationship. And it was such a dark spiral for me that I lost who I was. I mean, I wouldn't have dated me mm-hmm. if I look back, you know, and even now, kind of, I'm still not on the other side, but coming out of it, my friends and people that I've met here, they're like, wow, your energy is just completely different. You know,
like your energy is different now?
Now, yeah. Than it was in the last year, because I was in a dark space, and it wasn't because anyone put me there. It was because of all the things that were going on inside of me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you yourself are not fulfilled, like I know we've all heard that Instagram meme or phrase, like you can't pour from an empty cup. But it's so true. Like when we ourselves are not fulfilled inside, it does manifest in ugly ways in other parts of our lives.
Yeah, it does. I did so many things to mask it, you know, and I would get like a little bit of gratification from a project or take on something to fulfill me for the short term, right? I wasn't really looking at long term what was happening. And so I would be, you know, I'd be on this high or I would feel fulfilled for a little bit and then it would crash. And then I was like looking for the next high and it was like my emotions were, it was just a lot of up and down, you know, instead of that even keel kind of baseline feeling. And I have that a lot more now. And so I understand what that is and how important that is. But my emotions were definitely all over the place. You know, it was tough. It was a very tough time.
Yeah. So with your emotions, you know, when it was over, was it like a deep wrenching pain where it literally feels like someone is sitting on your chest and you can't breathe? Or were you more like sad, but also relieved and like a weight's been lifted off your shoulder? Or were you somewhere in the middle? Like, I mean, I know I'm just like thinking through the breakups that I've been through. And I know I've been on the receiving end of like both of those sentiments. And so, you know, what was it like for you? Like, how would you kind of describe what you were feeling and going through when the relationship ended? And just for context for listeners, you guys broke up over the summer. Was it in July? In August. Okay, August. In August.
It was absolutely heart-wrenching for me because not only did I go through a breakup, but I also had to leave my home. And everything was done very respectfully. It wasn't like in the movies, like, oh, this person like being tossed. I wasn't like that. Everything was done very respectfully, but I'm still leaving what was my home for almost a year. And so there was that change. I remember my friend, she's a mutual friend of ours, but she offered to let me stay at her place, which was so helpful because when you're going through a breakup, whether you know it's the right thing or not, whether you want it or not, it's painful. And it's nice to have friends that are family that can help you through that. But it was heart-wrenching for me. Like I was devastated. I mean, I couldn't recognize myself for a month. And I couldn't do anything really. Thinking back to those moments, I mean, I slept a lot. You fell
into like a situational depression where you wake. Yeah. It's like the first thing you wake up. It's the last thing you think about when you go to bed. It's hard to get out of bed.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like you've been through that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And how long? Yeah. How? I know you said you're still in the healing phases, but like how long did it take you? And maybe you haven't gotten there yet to kind of start feeling a little bit normal and feel like, okay, there's still hope. Even though we all know there is hope, but when you're in like the thick of a really bad, sad breakup, like you do feel that sense of hopelessness. So how would you kind of describe that shift and like, where are you today?
I would say, I mean, August was definitely the toughest for me. And then September, it was interesting because I left to go to Italy for 2 weeks. And I thought going there would somehow magically, you know, like eat, pray, love. I thought it would somehow magically make me feel better. And it didn't. It was a nice distraction for a couple of weeks, but I didn't come back feeling any better or any more enriched in my life. But I came back and I had to move. So I always say this, I'm so blessed beyond belief of the people that I've met here in Miami and that have helped me out. And one of my close friends is a real estate agent. So she got me an apartment, which I'm moving soon to my own place. But I'm renting a room from my current roommate, Amanda, who's like this badass PR entrepreneur in Miami. And it couldn't have been it was like fate that I met her because she was living in my building with her ex 4 years ago. They broke up and she ended up, you know, going through like something horrible and she bought her own condo in the building that I'm living in right now. And she's a life coach and she's learned so much in her life and she almost nursed me back to health or to life or whatever it is. But I've never met people in my life until this city who have just gone above and beyond for someone that they don't even know. And I'm like thinking, how can I pay this forward? You know, that's all I'm thinking. And it was just such a blessing to meet her. And then I had my 40th birthday. So, you know, it was there were a lot of big milestones, and there was a lot of happiness, but distractions. And then October hit, and, you know, I sort of had some lows. And then really until, I would say, last week, which when I went to Colombia, which was a transformational trip, I came back accepting what the reality is, you know, why we didn't work out. Because I think a part of me still hoped that maybe in some, you fantasize, right, the relationship okay. when you're out of it. And sometimes you forget the reasons why it ended. And so I had those hopes. And then when I came back from Colombia, I was like, you know what? I do accept. I accept what this is. And I have a renewed hope after coming back from Colombia.
If you have a craving for Indian food but don't always have the time to make Indian food and you want healthy options, I want to tell you about the Cumin Club. The Cumin Club is a meal kit service offering authentic Indian meals made in 5 minutes or less. The first time I tried the Cumin Club, I was blown away at the authentic flavors, and I couldn't believe that all I had to do was add hot water and wait a few minutes. All of their meals use high-quality ingredients and spices specific to each region of India. Their innovative freeze-drying technology ensures a long shelf life for all of their products, which means I can keep their meal kits on hand without worrying if they'll go bad soon. Some of my personal favorites are sambar idli, masala bindi, and rice upma. Head over to their website and discover over 30 different types of Indian dishes to choose from. Simply pick your meals and get them delivered right to your door with free shipping. For a limited time, they're also offering seasonal gift boxes for Diwali. Check out www.thecumanclub.com or view the show notes for more details. And now back to our episode.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm so glad to hear that you had like a strong community of people around you that were kind of like helping you, almost like these like angels that have been sent. Like,
yeah, they are angels.
Yeah. I remember when I went through my really devastating breakup, I just remember people just showed up in ways for me that I didn't even know were possible. And I was so, mm-hmm. so grateful for them. And I was like thinking the same, like, how do I pay you back? Okay. Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask, was the physical transition of like moving out. So once the relationship ended, you guys were living together at the time. So what happened? You were able to quickly move out, like you were able to find a place mm-hmm. quickly enough.
Yeah, it was very quick. I think it was within a week, really, that I moved out. And I wasn't asked to move out. I had the opportunity to take my time. But I think it was just, you know, it was too hard for me to be in the same space with someone that I loved so much. It was hard. And so I moved out pretty quickly. So within a week, I had, you know, my mom came down. I had some friends that came and helped me move everything out. And I stayed with a girlfriend for a couple of weeks. I went to Italy. And then when I came back, I went right into staying with my current roommate. And I am moving January 3rd to my own place here in Miami.
Okay.
So I'm really, really excited to start the new year.
Amazing. Amazing. I love that. I think, you know, everyone's healing journey is a little bit different. So can you like talk a little bit about what are some of the things that you did or are still doing, mm-hmm. you know, to try to heal and reflect and move on? Like you talked about some of these underlying issues that you like had personally as far as just different insecurities and communication and things mm-hmm. like that. So talk to us a little bit about what are some of the specific practices that you took to kind of help you reflect and like move through this this season of your life.
Absolutely. So I think definitely the first month I leaned on my friends. And so I think the good thing really about both of our circles, and I think Neeraj and I, we do have a lot of friends that overlap, and all of our friends, they want the best for the both of us. And so it was nice that people weren't coming in and saying, you know, negative things. It was more so, okay, let's start with you guys are both good people and it didn't work out for XYZ reasons. And As hard as it is, I really just tried to focus on that. And I would write a lot. I would write every day of just all the things that I needed to work on. And I focused on myself, and I'm still making mistakes, right? Like I'm 100% not healed. I will not say that. Like there are definitely things and behaviors that I'm like, wait, why am I still doing this? But I think it was a combination of just leaning on my friends, just avoiding negativity, writing, and traveling was great too. You know, like going to Colombia, being in Guatapé. This is like a part of Colombia. It's a valley, like a rural area. And so I think just it wasn't an escape. It was more so a connection again to myself, you know, mm-hmm. and I was I was around people that there are a lot of people that I just don't connect with anymore. I don't connect with the super conservative Indian community that's gossiping. And I don't connect with that, you know, and I don't want anything to do with that. It like makes my skin crawl and cringe when I think about it, because I used to be that person too. So it's even more of a cringe. But I've opened my circle up. Like the people in Colombia, they were so welcoming, so open. And I think putting yourself in more places where you can be the real you and be free, that helps your healing journey a lot more. So I think just continuing to do that, it's important. And I'll thank Neeraj for that. You know, he's the one that a long time ago, I mean, we never got to go together, but he knew that I had that in me, you know, that sort of that free spirit. And he felt that I would connect with that culture, maybe even more than the Indian culture. And so he had brought that up a while ago. But now I finally got to go and experience that and see that for myself. And it's true. You know, when you're around people, you can read it on Instagram. People are like, you know, your tribe is your vibe and I hate all these things. But when you actually live it, you're like, oh shit, this is true. It's true.
Yeah. And then I think I had seen a lot of stuff on social media of different community service oriented events that you were doing in Miami.
Definitely. Community is really, really important to me. I think I felt this way in New York, which is why I love Miami so much. A lot of people, including myself, we're very isolated. You're on your phone, like, I'm not talking to people in the elevator. I'm not saying hi on the street. And I'm not saying that's everybody, but that was my experience of New York. And when I moved to Miami, it doesn't matter. I mean, I get in, like, the Uber driver, we'll know each other's lives by the end of the 5-minute ride, you know? Yeah. And I love that sense of community. We don't have that anymore. And it's really important. So I did that on my birthday, actually. I decided to donate and spend time with my closest girlfriends. We donated at a homeless shelter. And you know, we're continuing to try to build community here with like the new transplants in Miami, because I know how that feels. And I want women, because it's harder as women to meet friends, is what my experience has been and what I've heard here. But I never want anyone to feel alone or to feel left out. That's just who I am. And I will do whatever I can to. Yeah. Like I will do whatever I can to make people feel included in the circle that aligns with them. Right. So,
yeah. Yeah, I love that. I think oftentimes breakups can be so all-consuming, meaning like all of your thoughts and emotions just become centered on this loss. And I think just being able to like shift your focus to others and community and helping others kind of just moves your attention from just yourself and like what you're going through to the well-being of others. And it can help like reground you. And that shift can be really refreshing and like much needed.
Yeah.
During a season of loss. You know, it sounds like you are planning to stay in Miami. So you'd move to Miami for the relationship and you're deciding to stay in Miami despite the relationship being over. And it sounds like you've built a really great community and, you know, you really love the city. But tell us a little bit about what your thought process was like, you know, in terms of deciding to stay in Miami versus going back to New York. Did you consider going back or, you know, talk us through that a bit?
Sure. So that, you know, that was an easy decision actually for me, because my mom, she was like, Sheetal, come back home, you know, like any parent would. I think any parent would be like, you know, these are your roots. And I think for me, it was really easy because I don't connect with New York anymore. And I love the city and there's art, there's culture, there's substance, there's all these things. But me as a person, I do not connect with that city anymore. And I have never felt freer and the space to be myself than I have here in Miami. And so that was very easy for me. I was like, I'm staying here.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And then I think you mentioned this to me in our conversation offline, but a lot of the community that you have now and some of your good friends in Miami were through your ex. And so obviously there's mutual social circles. So how are you guys navigating that post breakup?
You know, that's also been pretty easy because, and again, I don't know if it's because it's the city, but everyone, they're not taking sides. Like we're not at war with each other. You know, we still love each other. And our friends just look at us as two good people and they have individual relationships with us. And it's actually it hasn't been like strange or weird or anything like that, you know, and it's just they look at us as two great people. We weren't great together, but we're great to our friends. We're always there for the people that we love. And our friends keep that in mind and they have their, you know, separate relationships with us.
Okay, cool. I mean, that's great. I'm sure, you know, they appreciated that too. No one wants to feel like they're being forced to pick sides after a breakup. No. So, okay.
No.
And then, like, how did your family and close friends react? I guess let's start with your parents, because we saw your parents on season 2 and season 3. They were so adorable, especially your dad. And of course, you know, being Indian parents, they were so overjoyed that their daughter had met someone. And so how did they handle the news when you told them that the relationship had ended?
You know, my parents have sort of been on the, I mean, my mom and I are very, very close. And so she's sort of been on the journey with me. And I always call her for advice and things like that. And I think she probably knew that there was incompatibility. And so my parents weren't surprised, I guess. Let's just put it that way, right? I don't think, like, I think if you ask maybe any of our family and friends, they may not have been that surprised, only because of the incompatibilities that we had early on, and that was pretty consistent throughout the relationship. So
yeah.
I think with that said, I mean, they were very sad, because we both were very integrated into each other's families. Like, he loves my family, and I, to this day, will still consider his mom one of my closest friends. You know, we're very similar. And I have a lot of love and respect for them. And so I think our family and friends, and my family and friends, were more sad than anything else. But I think that they understood.
Yeah. Okay. That's good to hear that they could at least be supportive from, like, an understanding lens.
Absolutely. And they want, you know, each of us to be with whoever we're aligned with, and whoever we feel like ourselves with, you know, 100%. So I think to my parents, and I would guess for his parents too, that's probably the most important thing, right? Everyone just wants their child, you know, or their loved one to be happy.
Yeah. And that's really good to hear, because I mean, sometimes with Indian parents, like, their entire lives are centered around their children getting married, and sometimes that makes it hard, you know, that makes even their judgment a bit clouded, or they're not able to see the big picture. And so it sounds like your parents were pretty understanding from that perspective. And then you said, okay, so your friends and family, they weren't surprised, but did anyone express any sentiments about that to you, like, about your relationship while you were in the relationship? Or was it more like in retrospect, like after it ended, the conversation started surfacing, like, oh yeah, I could see why the relationship didn't work out?
No, I think from both sides, it was expressed.
While you guys were dating.
While we were dating, because, you know, like I said earlier in the podcast, a lot of people, I guess, look at it like, okay, it's, you know, it's only been a year and nothing, like, big has happened, and we still can't sort of get along. So I think the concern was, okay, well, how are you going to navigate a life together, right? In 5 years, 10 years, like, when you have kids and all these other additional responsibilities. So I think that's the perspective of our family and friends. And probably we felt that way as well. But I was just so much, you know, I was so in love that
Yeah. What, shifting gears a little, what elements of being in the public eye made it more difficult to be transparent about the relationship ending? So this interview basically marks your first public discussion about it, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you think being a public figure made navigating this breakup more difficult?
I think I put a lot of pressure on myself, and I felt like, you and I were friends, we've talked about this, but I felt like a fraud because, you know, I was on this show that ultimately just portrayed, and not only me, but, like, other couples too, like, all of us just riding off into the sunset, and it's like, oh, we got our happy ending. And I wanted to fulfill that for myself, for the public, for the viewers, for the show, whatever it was, I wanted to fulfill that. And when the cracks started showing, I couldn't talk about it. Maybe if I had talked about it, I don't know, maybe things might have ended up differently. I'm not sure. But I didn't want to break that illusion of this, like, you know, we're the perfect couple, and no one's a perfect couple, and we certainly weren't. And that doesn't take away the love that we had for each other. But I think it was really hard for me to break that. And then once we broke up, he hasn't, like, posted anything or anything like that. But I, I would post just quotes or whenever I was sad, I would post something to sort of vent about the loss of the relationship or whatever it was. And people started putting two and two together and they saw that I had unfollowed him or we had unfollowed each other. And that wasn't because we don't like each other or he did something to me or I did something to him. It was to protect, you know, our hearts because yeah. I would... And he wasn't even doing anything, but I would see him like out or anything. Like I would see something and it would just trigger me that we're not together and I'm not with him. And, you know, it was just not good for my mental health. And so that's why I did that. But then it was hard because people just run with these things. They're like, oh, something horrible happened or there was cheating or there was this. And there wasn't any of that. Like,
right.
And I don't need to prove that to anybody. But it wasn't that.
Right. Yeah, I think when you're in the public eye, people will hold everything against you as if you're not allowed to evolve or change like any other human, which probably contributed to why you felt this notion of, quote, being like a fraud. Mm-hmm. I know we were talking about like Reddit threads. You know, I've read Reddit threads where people will be shitting on somebody famous or well-known because of something that was said 15 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, as if like people aren't allowed to evolve or change their mind or, you know, have different
or make mistakes, right?
Yeah.
Like I said something on a podcast, like I don't even want to repeat it, but I said something on my friend Anisha's podcast 2 years ago about like an intimate moment with somebody I was in a very serious relationship with. And people, they're like, oh, this is why he's not with her, because this is what she does in her private life. And this is what she talks about in a podcast. And I'm like, and it's coming from conservative Indian people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, I'm done with that. I'm going to say what I want to say. And as long as I'm not hurting anyone else and I'm speaking my truth, I'm going to be me.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, you have to like put blinders on and just like, keep moving. How do you think, you know, going through this process of putting a relationship on TV and then navigating a breakup publicly, like, how do you think that has impacted how much you want to share with the public in the future as far as your personal life and personal relationships? Like, I know some people are the type to not want to share about their relationships until they're engaged or married and, you know, want to be more protective with it. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on going public with future relationships after navigating this experience.
So I definitely think there's a couple of things I want to say about that. But I think going forward, no one's going to know if I'm in a relationship, whoever I'm with, private till permanent, you know, maybe I'll drop a wedding photo. But,
yes.
You know, like I saw that. But because I don't think it's fair. I signed up to be a public person or a public figure. And there's a lot that I want to do in the world of entertainment and women's empowerment. There's things that I want to accomplish in a public way and on public platforms. But I don't think it's fair to include someone in that unless they're ready and unless I'm ready. And with my last relationship, I was not ready to be in the public eye with a relationship. Like looking back, I wish I had just done Indian matchmaking and left it as a cliffhanger or whatever and not brought my relationship onto that because I wasn't ready. And it also wasn't fair to my partner at the time because he felt that he was portrayed as sort of this superficial character, which... Mm-hmm. They did do that in a lot of ways. Granted, like they built out my story. They didn't build out his story. But it's on me post show coming out to sort of clarify that and bring out the elements of our relationship that are real and authentic. And he's got a million and one layers. You know, he's not superficial at all. But I wasn't ready to do that. And I had asked him to come on this show. And so there were things that he had to deal with, too, and that were hurtful for him. So I would say going forward, I wouldn't do that unless we're both really ready to do that. But I don't really see myself putting my relationship out there again like that.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you on team private till permanent.
Yeah,
I think becoming public about things, your relationship definitely amplifies the impact of public opinion. And I think like when you begin to invite people into your life publicly, that creates an expectation that you're obligated to continue sharing forever. And it's like if something happens or a breakup or whatever, if you don't come out and confirm it or talk about it right away, then that leads to rumors and speculation. And I definitely understand when celebrities or people want to like keep their relationship under wraps, just because just the amplification of like public opinion just further complicates, you know, so many different things.
I agree.
Let's see. In what ways do you think the relationship made you better? Not necessarily like the relationship itself, but like perhaps what lessons or personal growth did you kind of experience having gone through this whole relationship?
Well, I mean, it showed me that I still have so much work to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I realized it's not necessarily a negative thing that these things had come out, but I realized that I have to find, and I'm not there and I don't know how to do it yet, but I have to find some way to feel connected to myself and really strong in who I am and grounded and rooted without needing something else to bring me to that higher level. And I don't even know if that makes sense. And maybe I can unravel that one day, but it's just, yeah. I want to feel happy and at peace every day. Like just knowing I don't have to have anything else external. I don't have to have a kid, a marriage, a certain job or whatever it is. I want to feel like whatever I have in me, whoever I am, is that's enough to be happy.
Yeah.
And it's so much easier done.
Yeah. Do you think that you will take a break from the dating scene, or do you feel ready to go back?
Oh no. I mean, right now my heart it's closed. I wasn't perfect, but I gave a lot of myself to the relationship, and I'll have to find those pieces again, but yeah. Definitely not right at this moment, I would say.
Yeah, it'll take some time. What do you want? What do you want people to take away from your story? So you left audiences with a lot of hope the first time that they met you mm-hmm. through Indian matchmaking. So now that your story has shifted a little, like, what do you want people to take away now?
I don't want people to lose hope and faith in love, right? Finding love and in finding the right person for you, it's so beautiful, that connection with someone. And, you know, I've been lucky enough in my life to have that. So I don't want people to feel like there isn't that right person out there. But what I've learned that's so important is you have to be the right person to find the right person. And I don't think that in this moment, I am the right person. But I will be. And I want people to know that you don't have to be everything. You don't have to have it all figured out or be exactly that right person right now. But I think as long as you're trying and you're working on yourself and you're just trying to be better every day, what's meant for you will come to you.
Yeah, I love that. I remember I was sitting in church like maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and I heard the speaker say these words. He said, in your waiting season where you're looking for the one, work on becoming the one. And I think that like is something that really stuck with me and really shifted my perspectives on dating and just personal growth and things like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, last few questions. So you recently turned 40. I know you seem like you had a great time celebrating. You've been going on all these trips. Like, what are you most excited about in this new decade?
Wow, that's a great, great question. You know, I think the thing that I'm really excited about is to reinvent myself in a way that's real. And, you know, I'm working on a few things. I'm back in acting class and I feel like myself again, and I don't want to lose that or lose that part of me. And I think I'm just trying to enjoy, as cheesy as it is, I'm trying to enjoy just the process of that, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm my hardest not to care about whatever that end outcome is going to be.
Right. And are you still working your corporate job? Remind me.
I still work my corporate job.
That was with the energy company in New York, based out of New York.
Still there.
And then I see you've been doing the acting classes. You just mentioned that. Like, are there any other exciting projects or things that you're taking on in this new chapter that you are able to share with audiences?
I can. Well, one thing I can't share that I will maybe next year, but I was recently signed to an agency here in Miami. It's very reputable. So hopefully I can start getting jobs. So I'm excited about that.
Congratulations. And this is an agency for acting gigs or modeling or? Okay.
Acting in commercials. But I love it. I love being in front of the camera and telling a story and making people feel things. So that will always be a part of who I am and what I do. I don't know if I'll ever win an Oscar, but I'm going to continue. And I'm working on a really fun project in Colombia for a women's healing retreat. And, you know, some people might laugh. They might be like, oh, this unhealed person is trying to heal other people. But I think having a group of like-minded women coming together in such a beautiful country like Colombia and healing together, it's really special. I've seen it. And that's what I'm working on. So hopefully we can have the retreat set for next year. It's going to probably be in the spring. So I'm very excited about that. So those are two things that I'm working on right now.
Cool. I love it. I love it. Well, I think this is a good place to wrap up. Sheetal, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I loved having you. Thank you for trusting me with this interview. I know, you know, you had a lot of different places and outlets that you could have shared this with. So thank you for being so open and like transparent about like what you went through, because I know that your story and just I think there's so much power in like vulnerability, and I know that what you've shared today on this podcast will resonate with people literally all around the world. So thank you again, and I'm so excited for you, and I'm excited for this new chapter, and excited to see like all these cool things that you're going to be doing soon. So thank you.
And thank you for having me, Julie. It always feels like I'm talking to like my little sister, and it's loving and fun. I mean, thank you. Thank you for listening, and thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review. You can also connect with us on Instagram at @thebrowngirl_podcast and all other social media platforms listed in the show notes. Thank you again. I appreciate you being here.